Life. Table. Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Like justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time. Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Welcome to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever across the globe you may be, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, by Amnesty International volunteers who are part of a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're working to build a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our new theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of artists from around the world to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. My name is Jim Hutchings, and my co-host is Mona Hill. And today we continue with our series of programs about the housing and homeless crisis in Saskatchewan. We have had many views from a variety of perspectives over the past 2 years, including a powerfully poignant conversation with a woman who lived in the streets with her children, to the struggle of young women who must find a way to survive with no home. We have had homeless and housing advocates and a filmmaker who explored the plight of housing for people on social assistance. Today is Red Day, and we'll welcome guests who will address homelessness from different perspectives. First, from the Faculty of Social Work at the University of Regina, Jordan Puskas, and Ashley Creaser, who they'll discuss their role in the Red Tent campaign. And after the break, we'll be welcoming Dan Lindsay of Rainbow Youth in Regina to talk about the Red Tent campaign. So welcome, everyone.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You can say hi too, Dan.
Hello.
And welcome, everyone. It's Mona here. Here we go again, talking about homelessness. I have to say that just, you know, in the last day or so, I've read in the newspaper in the Leader Post that the city of Regina is going to give offices downtown a tax break. And at the same time, we have homeless people in this city. So I'm just wondering, you know, what's the connection here or the disconnect. And so I thought it would be important to talk about the Red Tent campaign. This is something that's been an annual event. I'm not sure how many years it's been going on. I know that Jim and I contributed and bought a tent last year. I think the Making Peace Vigil was working on it. So how did you two get involved in this?
Well, we're actually from the Social Work Student Society at the University of Regina. And last year, one of our members had contacted a professor from Winnipeg who is part of the Red Tent campaign, and she just kind of got in contact with him and was interested in the Red Tent campaign, which is a national campaign that it's actually been ongoing since 2006. And so we just connected with them that way. And this year when we took over with our student society, we decided we wanted to continue on with doing something for housing and kind of get a bigger role in the Red Tent campaign and perform some form of action this year. So we contacted them, and I've been a part of a lot of the teleconference calls between people all across the country, and that's how we got involved.
And what about you, Ashley? What role are you taking in this?
Through my practicum this semester with the Regina Anti-Poverty Ministry, I've come into contact with lots of people who are presently living without homes. And so when Jordan brought it up at a meeting that he was interested in putting this event together, I thought that I would really enjoy being part of something like this, because I see on a daily basis the struggles that so many people are having right now, with our vacancy rate being so low and the prices of rent being so high. So I thought that, yeah, getting involved.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about the university response. Is there a response? Because I know that you were talking about sleeping outside in a tent. Is this the plan that you have so that you could figure out what it's like? Or what are your plans for this?
Well, initially we were planning to sleep outside overnight just to kind of walk in the shoes of a homeless person and to experience it. So we're not only talking the talk, but we're actually experiencing one night of what they're going through. That we thought that would be the least we could do. To kind of relate to that. And so originally we planned to sleep outside of Victoria Park. That was our original plan. And then the whole Occupy movement happened, and so we would assume that we were going to join them. But then with everything that's kind of unraveled within the last week or so, we decided that's probably not the best approach, and it probably wouldn't go over very well with the city. So we just decided to take it a kind of a better approach, and we thought that we'd do it at the University of Regina, because 5 Days for the Homeless is a campaign that they do in March, and they sleep outside for 5 nights of the week, and to raise money and awareness for homelessness and housing and for Carmichael Outreach is what they donate the money to. So we thought it would be fine, and it would be extremely it would be possible for us to do that. But after we contacted the university, they said we wouldn't be able to because they would be liable for anything that happened. And our response was that 5 Days for the Homeless does it, and they do it for 5 nights a week, and all we're asking to do is for 1 night a week. So they just kind of responded to this to me today, and actually got our the URSU, the University of Regina Students Union president, to contact them, and he kind of called them out on it as well. And their response was kind of, we know that the reason they don't want to let us sleep outside is that if they let us sleep outside and don't let the Occupy people come and sleep there, that it's going to cause major issues. So
was this a request that the Occupy Regina group had made to go and move to the university?
I'm not sure if they made a request, but I know they had talked about it in the media, and the University of Regina had come out and said that they would not be allowed to sleep on campus. So.
Okay. So what's your plan then?
Our plan is...
do we want to reveal that right now?
Yeah, we might not want to reveal it fully, but we have a backup plan, and we're going to sleep outside no matter what is kind of our goal. Even if we're not able to do it in a public space, we're going to do it because the whole point is to experience sleeping outside for a night in these weather conditions.
How has your faculty responded to this?
They seem to be quite supportive of the whole movement so far, and...
And is it just you two, or are there other people joining you, or are there people from other faculties joining you?
There's quite a few of us in the faculty that are on the Student Society anyways that are going to be part of it. I'm not quite sure how many of them we've convinced to sleep outside with us on Monday night, but we're hoping that a bunch of them will show up on Tuesday to March, because it's an issue that's extremely relevant to the field that we're entering. So
that social work, we'll just repeat that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for sure, I would say we've been like more. This faculty has been more than supportive with us. One of the professors who has a class on 8:30 on Tuesday, she canceled the class so that everyone could come, and I know she's coming to support us. So that's huge for us. And other profs have kind of said what we're doing is great, and they're very impressed. And I know we have some very socially active professors that within the faculty, especially Garson Hunter. So he's, I think he would be very pleased with what we're doing as well.
Garson's been an old friend of this show.
Yeah.
We've always appreciated when he's come here. You mentioned something that's happening on Tuesday.
Right. On Tuesday, we're meeting all at 9 o'clock at Victoria Square Park, and then we're going to march to the Legislative Building. And then once we arrive at the Legislative Building, we're then going to hold a rally. So we're going to have various speakers and just people discussing the issues about homelessness and the housing crisis in Regina.
And do you know currently who's speaking?
Yeah, so far we've got Peter Gilmer from Regina Anti-Poverty Ministry is going to be speaking, and Mark Spooner, Dr. Mark Spooner, mm-hmm. from the Faculty of Education, and
Angelica Barth, who's from the Queen City Tenants Association, and also Sean Fraser from Carmichael Outreach.
Okay. So what do you hope to accomplish by sleeping out overnight and having this rally and having speakers at the legislature?
What we hope to accomplish is the most important thing, I think, is bringing awareness to the issue. And although I think there's been a lot of media talk and there's been a lot of articles in the paper and about housing and homelessness, and it's been out there for people to see, but it's still creating more awareness and letting people know that it's still an issue and it's not being improved for the better by anyone. Our governments aren't doing anything to improve the problem, so we need to keep it out there in the eye of the public and hopefully mobilize people to become involved and maybe create some sort of change, just to influence the governments, I guess.
Because housing is a basic human right, and so many people in our community aren't having that right met right now. And so, I mean, anything we can do right now to bring awareness to it, I think, is good.
Have you had any other groups, are they going to be joining you, or any other groups expressed interest in doing this with you?
I wouldn't say directly any groups. I know everyone's... Like, there's been support from a lot of different groups, and I know there's going to be members of certain groups, just the different service organizations mm-hmm. around Regina. All the speakers that are coming, I know they've been very supportive, and we've tried to spread the word among the service organizations more so than students, just because those are the people who are affected by the problem, and we're trying to advocate for them. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get them involved and make sure they're a part of it so their voices are heard.
Go ahead, Dan.
If I can just jump in here, I just want to do it, though I'm outside of the university and I work in, I'm the person you're talking about here and you are advocating, I really want to plug not just the faculty and the students of the university, but the whole U of R for a couple of years now, from their 5 days of homelessness, the Red Tent, various professors and students that are working for practicums and volunteering, crunching data for us on homelessness. We don't have money for this sort of thing. So this university here in Regina is, you know, way beyond the call of duty when it comes to this issue, and from the staff all the way up. So I really want to get that out to the listeners about, and all, you know, not just social work department, it could be justice, it's from all over the place, education, you know, mm-hmm. Mark Spooner's from
Absolutely.
Education. And this university, I think it's kind of very unique in all of Canada, the amount of support that the university puts out on this issue, and I just really wanted to say that, and I wanted to raise my hands and say thank you to you guys for doing this, and because it's important, because nobody is listening, and we just have to keep, you know, sounding the drum on this, because we're getting into the time where people are going to start dying again this year.
Yes, we are. Have you two had any contact with, well, Ashley, you do work with the Anti-Poverty Ministry, and imagine you do come in contact with people currently who don't have their own home to live in. And what about you, Jordan?
I'm actually doing my practicum at Street Culture Kids Project, which is kind of a similar service organization to Rainbow Youth Center. They both have a big focus on homelessness, and Street Culture has a couple different group homes, so they kind of address the problem that way. And you just see some of the youth who come into services at Street Culture who don't have anywhere to go and who are struggling to find housing and don't really have any opportunities or options. And it really puts a damper on the whole situation when you see that it's happening with youth and not just people typical, what the public would deem typical homeless people who are suffering from addictions and stuff. It's a problem that affects everyone. It's not a select group of people, I guess.
You're absolutely right. I have a coworker that I was speaking with just before I left to come here and do the show, who's currently living in, I guess, what people would consider low rental housing. And she has snow coming in her house, between the wall and the floor in her bedroom. And every spring in the past 3 years, she's had flooding. She pays $1,000 a month rent for herself and her two children. It looks like a very nice home from the outside. And she's afraid to complain about it because she's afraid that if she does complain, they'll find a way to get rid of her and bring someone in who won't complain about the problems. This past spring, she had to bail and bail and bail. And then, of course, then you have the danger of living in a home with mold in the basement and the health issues related to that. So, you know, we talked about this, and she said, I don't dare complain because if I do, I might end up having to go find a place where I have to pay $1,500 a month rent. So, and I can't do that. I absolutely can't. I don't have enough money to do that. So you're right. It's not just, she says, I'm so grateful to live in a home where I only have a little bit of snow coming in to my bedroom. What kind of a state have we got to in this province and in this city where someone who has a job, you know, I mean, it's not great pay, but she feeds her children, her kids go to school every day, who turns around and says, I'm so grateful to have a home that has snow coming in and it floods every spring, but I don't dare complain about it to the landlord. And this goes back to the film that we talked about on Human Rights Radio a couple of weeks ago about fixing places up and about complaining, and people are afraid to complain.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's not just in the housing in Regina, but in Saskatchewan, but right across Canada. Like yesterday on the news, we're now finally going to deal with a reserve in Manitoba that has to go out and, you know, for their residents, chop a hole in the ice and bucket all their water in to flush their toilets. They've never had running water of any kind. And, you know, this is Canada. This is Canada. And, you know, there is, you know, saying, like, we cannot even provide our citizens running water. We are, you know, in the last 30 years, we have to really stop now and really look back at what's gone on since corporations have taken over the governments and it's all about corporations. We have to, everyone, because it affects everyone on one level or another, and we have to go back and, you know, raise the image of Canada again as where we were in the world. We were the nation that created peacekeeping. We were the nation, you know, that led the way on human rights. And now we're one of the nations, I don't know what level we're on now, but we're dropping fast, where, you know, with some of these countries that we were condemning are surpassing us in the level of rights and, you know, for our own people, mm-hmm. let alone Aboriginal people.
So after this is over, then what? After the campaign is over and the speakers of the legislature are gone, then what for you two?
Well, for me, I don't know, I think for both of us, Asha will probably agree with me, but it's going to be something that's going to be important to us, I think, as we go on into our career, and I think it's going to influence where we're looking to get work as we get in, as we get into the social work profession. And just in general, I think... So one of the speakers that I went to a Regina Anti-Poverty Festival a couple of weeks ago, and one of the speakers mentioned something about building a community within people who care about this issue and working together as a group. There's a bunch of service organizations who focus on housing and there's people who have a passion about housing and homelessness and creating solutions for it. So it's a matter of working together to continue to do things to create awareness and to try to bring change, because if we don't, this is the only way that it's going to happen, because the government's ignoring the problem, and the only way we can try to influence them is by putting it out there to the public and making it a bigger issue.
Jim has had contact with our mayor in the past and talked to him about this issue, and his response that it's a provincial issue and it's not a city issue. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's kind of funny, because obviously it is a provincial issue. We were talking about how it's a federal issue, but it's clearly a problem in Regina, where they said in April of 2011 that the vacancy rate was under 0.7%. A healthy vacancy rate, I think, is supposed to be around 3% or something. 3 or 4%, and we have it at 0.7%. So it tells you the availability of housing, but also it's just them ignoring the problem, and they want to build a dome, and the provincial government wants to give a housing rebate, and the federal government wants to build jails. But none of these are practical solutions to the problem. Affordable rental housing is an issue. Homelessness is an issue. And all levels of government are just ignoring it and hoping that it will recover itself, I guess. I don't know.
We've had a national housing strategy put forth. I think I was actually looking at it on my computer this morning, and any submissions for funding from that strategy were to be in by September 13th, I believe, of this year, 2012. Do any of you have any idea who has applied to that, if any of the groups that you're working with or you've worked with have applied to the National Housing Strategy at all, or what's happened with it? To me, it seems like it's so ethereal. I've heard nothing back.
Are you talking about the homeless partnering strategy?
Yeah, that's it.
With the Regina. Yeah, those proposals are all been in, and they've been approved or disapproved.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I don't know what projects have been approved. I know our program, Youth Express,
A little bit about that. What does Youth Express do?
Well, Youth Express, we do the homelessness for youth, helping to secure housing, find housing, secure housing, and then retain that housing, and then take on a case management support because we're dealing mostly with young single mothers. Trying to get them into affordable housing, and in some cases they come to us, they have no identification, they're not on social services, they're living 14 people into a house, and they have to get a place because they got three kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will take them from day one to, you know, get their identification, get them on social services, take them through the, you know, all the red tape of how to do that, fill out the forms, take them there. We get referrals from transition houses, everything to help, you know, mm-hmm. house people. We don't have a housing stock, but we help, you know, we'll pick you up and take you out and drive you around and provide the tools that you need
process.
To find a place.
Yeah.
Well, no, we didn't get funding. Our funding is cut off March 31st, is over.
So who's going to do this work with the young people once your funding is gone, Dan?
Nobody.
Okay, so then we'll have
part of our exit strategy is we're going to return it back to other agencies. But ours was a pilot project that started in 2008. We've run 2.5 years, and we're not a program; we're a service mm-hmm. per se. We hook up social services and all the youth to everything they may need, medical, legal, whatever. And that's all about retaining housing and teach them how to do that. That's the whole point, is to teach them how to do it on their own. So that all came about because all the other agencies that, like, in fact, you, how I met you was when you're working at Work Prep, you're supposed to be teaching these kids Work Prep, and you can't teach them Work Prep because you're dealing with all their housing crisis.
Right.
Well, that was across the board in every agency. So nobody was doing what they were supposed to do because of the housing crisis, so hence our program formed. So I guess now we don't need our program. So now that the vacancy rate is even lower, and actually somebody even said, well, if it's so tough and so hard to find housing, why are we helping people find housing? And I kind of like thought that's kind of absurd. It's like, what, do we wait when there's 20 houses available for everybody? That's when we help them? How does a single mother who's pregnant and has two kids try to get to the food bank?
Mm-hmm.
And things like the food bank, like if you miss an order, mm-hmm. you're suspended for the next month. So anybody who missed their order yesterday will not receive a food bank order in December. So if they don't have a car and it's the way it is outside, yeah, and they got, yeah, three kids and they're going to put them on
and
the bus,
no,
and they have no money
them
to get on the bus, and they have no way to get there, it's just really kind of a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we actually, we will provide that service, but that's when I check in with our kids and find out where they're at, what they need. Some of them, that's all they need. Some of them come in, we help them find a place, we never see them again. Some of them need total life skills.
Maybe some of our agencies need to think about approaching the corporations for assistance with this.
Well, that's a good idea. When I sat on the board of Carmichael, it's one of the things I was talking about, is I call it selling programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, there might be some ethical questions, you know, about where you're getting, you know, I wouldn't take money from an arms dealer, you know, but, you know, a company that's making, you know, nuclear bombs. But, you know, if we can get money to support a program, at this point, as long as we get the services to the people who need it, and, you know, milk and diapers to children that need it, it would be something to look at.
Great. We have about 30 seconds left. Ashley and Jordan, what did you want to say before you go?
I just hope that if anyone is able to, on Tuesday, November 22nd at 9 a.m., to meet us at Victoria Park and march with us and rally with us, because this is something that could affect anyone at any moment, you know? So housing is important, and it's a right.
Thank you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, and we'll be right back. And that was Phil Collins, Another Day, Just Another Day in Paradise. Before we get going here, I just wanted to mention that we have our CJTR 10th Anniversary Showcase Series Grand Finale tomorrow night at the Exchange and the Club at 2431. I had your mic down, Mona, sorry.
Oh, yeah, I said.
2431 8th Avenue. The doors open at 7:30 p.m. The show starts at 8:30 p.m. It's $10 at the door, and we will have Bell Plain, Corey Estes versus the Time Pirates, and the Lonesome Weekends on the Exchange side. And in the club, we've got solo acts How Owl and Tiny, and that'll be hosted by Square Sound Round Body. There's free food, including birthday cake and prizes provided by CJTR and some of the bands. So it's going to be a really good time. So we hope to see you all there.
Be there or be square.
I will be there. I will be there.
I have a couple of announcements also. 13th International Transgender Day of Remembrance is occurring on November 20th. From 1:30 to 17:30 is 5:30, right? Military time,
yes.
Confuses me. 1:30 to 5:30. St. James United Church in Regina. That's 4506 Sherwood Drive. There will be an informal gathering featuring choir performances from Prairie Pride Chorus and St. James United Church, and presentations from Lisa Smith of U of Regina Pride, Michaela Schultz from TransSouth Support Services, Jacqueline Anacquard from APSS, AIDS Program South Saskatchewan, and Zachary Goodmanson from One Song. I've engaged in these Days of Remembrance in the past, and they're very worthwhile going. What it's about is remembering people who are transgender who have suffered horrendously, and most of them that have died over the years, and thinking about them and remembering them, and it's like a vigil, and they deserve that respect, I believe. So if you have any wish to be there, it's on the 20th of November at 13:30. Is that 1:30 in the afternoon?
Yep.
Till 5:30. Yeah. Thank you. This is why I'm a social worker. I don't do numbers well. That's the first one. The second announcement is the Saskatchewan premiere screening of This Time Last Winter. I am so excited about this movie. It's on November 24th from 7 to 2200, whatever that is, 8
That's
o'clock,
eight,
7
yeah.
to 8. The half-hour dramatic film will be followed by a panel discussion on the subject of violence in young relationships. Their admission is by donation, and then there will be a reception catered by the amazing sous chef. That would be Dickie Uzishapi. He's got amazing, wonderful food, so even if you just come out for the food, it would be great. Film stars Saskatchewan talent Dana Henderson, Ian Broadland, Cheryl Jack, and my good friend Errol Canestino, Karen Von Staden, and Kent Nolan. And for her role in the film, Dana Henderson received the award for the Best Actress at the 2010 Winnipeg Aboriginal Film Festival. So that's the Saskatchewan premiere screening of This Time Last Winter on November 24th at 7 p.m. at the Royal Saskatchewan Museum.
Wow. Yeah, lots happening on the 24th.
There's a lot of things happening. Yeah,
yeah, that's the kickoff for AIDS Awareness Week.
That's
and
right.
And if I can get us a shameless
you go right
plug
ahead.
Here.
You bet.
Rainbow Youth Center in partnership with APSS and All Nations Hope and Health Department, everything. We're doing a reading at 7 p.m. again on the 24th
is that
of 1500?
The
play. I'm sorry?
Is that 1500?
That's 3 o'clock.
That'd be
oh,
3
that's
o'clock.
3 o'clock.
No, this is 7 p.m.
okay.
in the evening.
That's 1900.
And it's the reading of the play Promises.
Oh, okay.
And there's information out there, so if you hear about it, sure, come on down and listen to that reading.
And when is that, Dan?
That is the 24th, too, at 7. So lots happening.
We're going to be talking about that next week, aren't we?
Yes, next Friday.
Yeah, next Friday.
That will be a day after the kickoff.
Right, right. Dan's going to be back on the show.
And then we have World AIDS Day on December 1st.
Right.
And then that leads into Aboriginal AIDS Awareness Week. So we got like 2 weeks of a lot of stuff coming up.
One of the things I'll say about Regina is we have so many social activists who care so much about so many human rights issues. I'm so proud to live here, quite frankly, because I've met some amazing people who care and actually take action and try and make a difference. So let's move on to the second red thing we're going to talk about.
Well, we have black hats too, and brown hats.
Okay.
Not just red hats.
Isn't it called the Red Hat Campaign?
No, actually.
Oh, okay.
No, it's Raising the Roof, and it's they surround themselves over Toque Tuesday, which will be February. Oh, let me just look at my notes here. Toque Tuesday is going to be February 7th, 2012 this year. But we're kicking off the program now at Rainbow. We have it again this year, and it will run all winter until the end of February. And we sell toques. They're $10. And the great thing about it, about 50% of the proceeds come right back. All the proceeds that come back to Rainbow, mm-hmm. and to for housing for youth at risk of becoming homeless or that are homeless.
Well, and it sounds like they will be at risk of becoming homeless after March.
Yeah, but Rainbow, we're really good at, we have other programs there, our young parent programs.
Yeah.
They are going to end up doing
sort of absorbing the work,
trying to absorb as much as they can.
Yeah.
Like they're not, they will not allow that just to disappear, even though the funding is, even though it's taken three of us full time for the city to do this, but they will come up with something. We have time. We have, what was that, about 4 months, 5 months? That we will have time to try to think of something, because Rainbow just will not allow, you know, youth to...
That's an amazing organization.
The 30th anniversary, another shameless plug coming up next year, 30th anniversary for Rainbow Youth Center, so you're going to hear a lot more, and we want people to come out on that too. So, you know, big times, you know, coming ahead, and, and sad times. But this is the 15th year of the Raising the Roof Toque Tuesday campaign. And this is our second year involved in it. And it's such a great campaign. Last year we achieved our goal. We sold over 40,000 toques across the...
Holy cow.
40,000. And then this year we want 45,000 to sell. Mm-hmm.
This is nationally you're
talking
about?
That's nationally, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I wish I...
How did you do here?
Because it was my first year doing it, and then trying to, you know, have all my clients and meetings and everything else that we have to go to sell.
Yeah.
We did really good. I think we did about $3,600 that actually came back to us. And that's, you know, sure beats doing a hot dog sale in front of, you know, a supermarket somewhere. So that's, you know, money that, you know, a sizable chunk of cash that we can do something with. I want to double that, triple that this year now that I know a little bit more of how to go about doing it. But it really triggers me. I sat up, you know, you phoned me last night to, you know, to come in and talk about the toques. And last year, Toque Tuesday, and I can be 100 years old and never work in this field again, and I'll always remember when they, if I ever see Toque Tuesday, because it was really a hard time for us last year. You picture yourself in Scar Street Mall, across the street from the nice fancy mall, because we can't go in the mall. We had a table set up, and we were selling toques. I guess we were out there from 10 till 2:30. We got there about 9 to set
up. That was in February, right?
It was February. The first Tuesday in February. It was minus 40.
Right.
And the wind chill, it was about minus 45. And for the listeners out there, Scarth Street Mall, it's like a street, but it's for pedestrians only, so it's this big, huge area. And you could shoot a machine gun down there and not worry about hitting anybody, not even a dog.
Actually, it's the F.W. Hill Mall now.
Okay. Well, yeah, exactly. Whatever it is now. And hey, that's how cold it was.
Mm-hmm.
And we were selling toques. We had some of the youth from the RTE program.
What's that?
The Road to Employment program, another program that's run by Rainbow. They hit the university, and they were selling toques down there. So we were out doing our Toque Tuesday. And we were right in front of the Globe Theater. And directly right behind, about 200 feet straight across from us, if you could go look through the building, they had the alley blocked off. And they were, you know, a woman had died, froze to death behind a dumpster.
I remember that.
And here we are selling toques for Toque Tuesday for $10 a toque. And people that were coming out at lunchtime, you know, we actually did very well, because they just felt so, we were so insane to be out there in this weather. And they were oblivious to, you know, they cover these things up really well. That, you know, all the emergency vehicles were hidden in the alley, and they were doing their investigation. And but we were there. We were watching it. You know, saw it go down. And to know that while we're trying to raise money for youth homelessness, they are putting
a woman
body
who had frozen to death
frozen to death
because she was homeless.
Well, no, but again, our media, they hide all that. We don't, you know, they'll just report there's a death. It's not because they're homeless and that.
Yeah,
because
we
don't want to,
then.
Yeah, well, in further meetings and that, you know, we get into, to for our mental health sometimes, and, you know, so we don't just break down crying and despair all the time. We have what's called black humor. And one of the things was, oh, she wasn't homeless, and she was just a tired chopper who decided to take a rest because... You know, we had one in the park. We had one in, you know, we have people freezing to death. And for whatever the conspiracy of silence out there, that not to report these things is, you know, has to stop. And I don't know why we have that, but it happens far too much, and it doesn't need to happen. And so for now, for Duke Tuesday, for me, always comes with a kind of bitterness. It's not a... you know, for me personally, it's because I'll never forget that. You know, it was like a surreal moment out of some strange Clockwork Orange type movie. We're standing in this barren wasteland of minus 40 selling tubes and freezing to death at the same time. And 200 feet away, they're actually removing, you know, a deceased person that froze to death overnight. And that will always...
I'd just like to jump in here. I mentioned this on a show before, but the city of Edmonton, I was there about a month ago, and the mayor of the city of Edmonton has spearheaded a program to get 3,000 people, homeless people, off the streets in 10 years. It's a 10-year program, and they're making great progress on it. So it can be done.
Well, BC, Alberta, everyone's doing it except Saskatchewan.
Yeah,
that's we're the only province not doing it.
Yeah,
there's the Housing First movement that's happening. It's proven to be effective. It's proven that it works. We know all the reports from all the universities, all the doctors, all the scientists, all the social people. That's all been done. It's all in. The information's there. And, in fact, actually, Saskatoon, they just tabled something 2 weeks ago at the city council level about Housing First. So Saskatoon's, you know, they're getting it, but Regina, we're just not getting it, right? So I don't know. So we need to, you guys to keep putting up tents and the university there to do all the work that you guys are doing and just keep the information coming out because, you know... I guess for people, it's not a problem or an issue until it affects you or your kids or something, right?
Exactly. You know, my question is, currently, I've lost count of how many organizations have sprung up and how many people have decided to take this on as their sort of raison d'etre in terms of advocacy work. And I'm thinking, how many... You talked about... Jordan, you talked about... organizations getting together now and try and form almost like a coalition. So this is a plan for the near future, is it? And then, I mean, how long are we expected to do this? How long do we expect to continue to fight for this right for our people who are homeless in our province before the mayors respond, before the city council responds?
As long as it takes, I think, has to be the mindset, because you can't just give up on these people. And just in reference to what Dan was saying, a lot of it, the housing issues and the homelessness, it's hidden and people don't see it. And people don't go downtown. And if you are downtown, you don't directly see it. And I think that's why there's a lot of negative attitudes towards the whole Occupy thing, because it kind of put it out there. And even though everyone that was a part of that movement wasn't homeless, there were a lot of people out there who were homeless living in those tents. And then it's out there in the public, and the city sees it, and they don't want it to be there anymore because it's putting homelessness as an issue up front in the media, and the media covered it really well, rather than in the past where it's just hidden, and now it's going to go back behind closed doors. And they were worried about people dying in the park, and they were worried about their health, but now they're just going to go die under some bridge or in a parkade or whatever.
But that's convenient. If we just have them dying sporadically here and there in a park or in a dumpster, then, you know, we can deal with that. If we had two or three die in a park, it might be a liability issue. Did that sound sarcastic? But, yeah, we have to... we have to deal with the housing issue. It won't go away. It's only going to get worse. It's going to come up and bite us
in
the
end. Do we dare talk about rent control again?
Well, you know, and that's fair. And we do need rent control, but as I told, you know, my counterparts in the NDP that putting rent control on an apartment that has snow blowing into it, which is actually...
Well, this is that's the house.
Her house, and yeah. She's got a good house, because I have ones where they don't have doorknobs. How you lock the door or close the door at night is you wedge a piece of 2x6 between the wall and the door.
And how much are they paying for rent?
You know, $800, $900. So
yeah.
So putting rent control on a house that's, you know, $8,000, $9,000 that was is condemnable. It was $350 4 years ago.
That's
and
right.
It was condemnable then, and in 4 years they've done no work on it except raise the price. That's not going to do anything, right? And the city is, in all fairness to, you know, Mayor Pack and the city, they do have, you know, programs out there for homeowners, you know, to upgrade their houses. There's lots of programs you can go to upgrade and do these houses. Some of these houses, though, are not worth investing in. So what we got to do is, instead of paying them to upgrade these houses, we got to give them incentive to rip them down and build new ones, which the city does. They do, you know, property tax breaks and everything, you know.
Property taxes are going up.
No, but when you build you rip down one of these junkers and build a new house, you get like a 5-year deal. Like the city is doing stuff. It's not that the city's not, you know. And I understand, you know, and I'm not defending the city, but I have to give the city credit where credit's due. Like, you know, Pat is working hard to do it. He can't, you know, raise welfare rates. He can't, you know, do, you know, these things. He doesn't have the money to build apartment buildings. But what we have to do is bridge so we can get all three levels of government working together to do these things, and also bring in private sector. Now, you know, the whole argument that they had in the election about rent control, like, mm-hmm. If we have rent control, nobody's going to build anything. Well, we know that's just the biggest lie, because we had 20 years with no rent control, and nobody built anything.
Right.
So, you know, like, it's just a no-brainer. Rent control is good, and then, and again, now to give credit to the NDP guys, this new generation thing, the new buildings wouldn't, you know, you built a new building, you wouldn't be under that rent control thing. It's what it's they're designed for is, you know, the condemnable house that they are renting now, that was $350, that you now just can't say next month, you know, okay, now it's $1,000, mm-hmm. which is rightfully. But we have to go back and we have to look at things. We have the rental supplement income program. And that can be up to like 260 or
200. And that's only for people who have families. So
yeah, families moving
person,
in and
it's
people on fixed incomes. It's a great program.
Right.
They actually have a little checklist, mm-hmm. which we provide, you know, to our clients at Rainbow. Things like, because they do an inspection on your house, you have to meet a list of things. Like, do you have a working smoke detector?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cost $4.99 from, you know, Canadian Tire. Do you have doorknobs? Are there holes in the stairs and porch? You know, do you fall through the rotted wood? Do they have hand railings? Do you have exposed wiring? Do your toilets work? Because we have people in houses that don't have water running into the toilets, or they have to bail it by hand.
Mm-hmm. This is in the city of Regina,
yes. I got one lady that her washer and dryer, she has to... Anyways, the washer drains into buckets that then have to be bailed out, and so we have all these things. So what my point is, they should not be allowed to rent a house that does not meet this basic requirement for the rental supplement. And we're not. And then the landlord, no, we're not talking. You got to go spend $50,000 to do a renovation. We're talking basic things. Do you have exposed wires? Replace the flooring or the steps if they're falling off. Put doorknobs on. I have one client that has a house. They went out and they to the Sally Ann and they bought a deadbolt.
Mm-hmm.
That is their doorknob and lock for their front house. Other than that, they didn't even have a doorknob.
I attended a housing forum maybe 2 months ago where there was a landlord as part of the panel discussion. And according to him, he really can't be responsible for all the damage that the tenants do to these homes, and it's far too expensive to expect him to fix everything and not raise the rent.
Well, and you know, on that hand, and I have to say, on with the landlord, I went to one house and one night party, it was a small bachelor and a two bedroom, like a duplex thing, was $17,000 damage.
Mm-hmm. Now, and occasionally it does happen.
Well, and yeah, and that happens, you know.
Right.
And
but then to turn around and rent it in that condition to someone else.
Well, no, this fella did pay the $17,000 to fix it, but you know, they're not rich too. But we're also looking.
But
we're
you're talking about people with broken toilets that aren't fixed.
Yeah. We're talking about I guess what I'm talking about. These are homes where people, you know, they might be two brothers, or it might be a family, or it might be a person that own 50 of these homes, 25 mm-hmm. of these homes, 100 of these homes. We're not talking about moms and pops that bought another home as a retirement investment. You know, those homes are generally kept up. We're talking about slum lords, and that's what they are. They're lords over slums, and they keep them that way. And there's another, once you move out, there's another lineup of people to go in. In fact, the house I went over because it was coming for rent, right across the street from McCall's office there mm-hmm. on Retallick, it was $800 because I wanted to find out how much it was. A one bedroom, $800 a month, and it was broad daylight. And the landlord guy was there cutting the grass, so he took me in, and I walked in the living room, and the floors were all warped and you know mm-hmm. not very nice. And as we walked into the kitchen in broad daylight, this was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, there was like 20 mice and rats scurrying across the counters.
Okay.
And this is $800 a month.
You've made your point. We have a couple of minutes left. What, two or so, Jim? How do people get toots from raising the roof?
You can phone Rainbow Youth Center at 757-9743, and we'll have toots there. And also, you can order them online from Raising the Roof website, raisingtheroof.org. And the great thing about that, any toques that are sold in Saskatchewan, because we're the only program selling the toques, the donation part of that sale will come to Rainbow Youth Center.
Wonderful.
So you could be buying them in Saskatoon off, you know, online, mm-hmm. and we will get that donation to Rainbow Youth Center.
Thank you all for being on the show. And I just want to repeat that the Social Work Student Society, in conjunction with the Red Tent Campaign, presents the National Housing Day, November 22nd. There will be a march and a rally starting at 9 a.m. in Victoria Park, and they will end up at the Legislature Buildings for 10 a.m. There will be a number of speakers to address the issue of housing and homelessness. And my very last announcement is Amnesty International Regina invites you to our Right for Rights campaign on Human Rights Day, Saturday, December 10th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Westminster United Church. And we will have a special guest speaker, Amber Fletcher, recipient of the Governor General's Youth Award, in recognition of her work in promoting the equality of women and girls in Canada. There will be a free will potluck, and there will be more entertainment, and you can get in touch with me here at the radio station or at 586-1938 for more information. Take it away, Jim.
Okay, as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."